590 FM.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. It's Text Line Tuesday, guys. Text us. Send me belated birthday wishes at the bare minimum. All right?
Yeah. I've already gotten a lot of DMs. I'm laughing at what we just talked about. So I'm getting a lot of DMs already. About this stuff. Try to keep them brief because I don't know. Sometimes people send me like really long ones, and I'm like, I don't know how you expect me to read this on air. Like, what are we doing here?
You need that TDLR.
Yeah, just tighten it up just a little bit, okay? Like, I'm not reading your column on this. Like, I'm reading your thought.
Page numbers on their text.
Yes. I don't want annotations. Like, where's your sourcing for this? But it was a reminder when I went on there of Instagram notes. How you feel about Instagram notes?
This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. If you haven't got the update or haven't seen what's going on with Instagram now, you go into your messages, and at the top, there's like this column of people putting up. It's like stat. It's like MSN Messenger statuses, basically, is what it is. Yeah, and you can like reply to it. So JD could be like the Matt Murray signing, and then people can respond and be like, no, I hate it. Yes, I love it. Anyway, I think it's so stupid. But we're talking about it, so clearly it's working for them.
Actually, that was a good application of it, what you just said right there. I went, that's a good idea.
We should do our daily polls on Instagram.
Also, now you're all fired up about Instagram notes, dog.
Well, you know what? I might love Instagram notes now. Sign me Instagram for influencer deal.
Check out our Instagrams every day for our Instagram note of the day. We will have those for you. Yeah, the first thing I thought of was, man, I used to think like I stand by this. There is nothing in this world that I would want revealed less than every MSN Messenger status that I've ever had. Like if there was some, you know, hacker that hacked into my old MSN and was like, hey, dude, here's you writing an emo lyric that was directly targeted at some girl who you were trying to get the attention of with your away status. I'm going to post this online. I would do anything. I'd be like, yeah, you own me now. Like, that is the best blackmail you could have. Internet search history, whatever you want. Nudes, whatever you like. I don't care. I'd rather those 1,000 billion times more out there than that period of life and those statuses that were probably the most cringe thing, like, in the history of the universe. And I think that a lot of people feel the same way. I think that a lot of people feel the same way. You have just opened up a box for every kid who uses that app. Although maybe every kid's on TikTok now. They're all trying to become TikTok stars because everybody on TikTok has 500,000 followers. Like, I feel like you start with it. If you don't have 5,000 TikTok followers, you're a loser.
I certainly don't have 5,000 TikTok followers.
You are an absolute loser then, because it's like everybody I see on TikTok is like, how did you get this many? What is happening?
There's not that many people in the world, clearly. They're never ending.
They're talking. The kids are talking. And I mean T-O-C-K-ing. They're talked out.
There's no C.
Oh, well, what exactly? They're T-O-K-ing, all right? They're TikToking. All right. See, I don't know.
That's why you don't have TikTok. You can't even spell
I'm too old.
It.
Oh my God. I'm ancient for TikTok. I told you, my version of TikTok is I get it a couple days later and then I DM the old talks to you and you go, this is old. I saw this on TikTok already. And I go, all right. I'm sorry. Sorry for sending you a funny video, friends. Anyway, so yeah, I'm out on the talk. I think I'm in on notes now. I think that we've just figured out a practical application.
We should make notes like our thing. We got to get in on it. It came out yesterday. We got to get in on it quick and have like, we're going to take our corner in the Instagram notes world. And
we're the note dogs.
We're the note dogs.
Yeah. All right.
Let's try it out.
That's what we're doing.
It's ambitious, but
I do feel for all the kids out there though that are, you know, going to not realize that there's going to be more permanence to this, that their friends are going to screenshot it. Because, like, one of my favorite things I ever did, and I suggest this same move to you and your friend groups, is I went through my friends' old Facebook statuses from when they were in Yeah, I went through my friends' old Facebook statuses, like my close friends, like a couple of years ago, and I was just bored. I think it was Pandy Times, actually, and I was just like bored, and I went through old Facebook statuses, and I just started screenshotting Facebook updates, because remember, it used to be like, Facebook, what are you doing right now? Mm-hmm. And so I just have friends who have...
What's on your mind?
Yes, and I have... I have screenshots. I have screenshots of some of the most cringeworthy, hilarious stuff that every once in a while I'll just drop into a group chat and it'll just create chaos. It's so good.
And then
it's
you're the person you drop it in and you mute.
Oh yeah, 1,000%. I just drop it in there and I let the rest of the dogs feast on it. You know, like I drop that bone, that little meat bone into the piranha pool and I'm like, yes, my fishies. You know, like, feed my fishies. That's it. Like, that's all I'm doing. So anybody that wants to do that, good reminder to do that. It's a great trick for the bros. But yeah, this is going to be danger for a lot of kids. I'm just saying Notes is going to get some people. Notes is trouble, dude. Notes is trouble. Except for us, because we're note dogs, and we're going to absolutely be using it, and we're going to be firing it up, and we're going to be putting our questions, poll of the days, some stuff on Notes. So follow at JD Bunk is at Alish44. We basically, that was the A-list today.
No, we got time for one. Let's do it, Josh.
Okay.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
You're right. I absolutely love this story. So, a group of farmers and unemployed youngsters, is how they're being described, were busted for running a fake Indian Premier League and conning Russians into betting on it. So this group streamed these cricket matches on YouTube. They wore legitimate real kits. They had a YouTube stream with 5 HD cameras. They had a commentator who practiced and trained to sound like the legit, I don't watch Indian Premier League, but the legit commentator, like, took his pacing and his inflection. They got all the way to the knockout quarterfinal stage of their fake league before the cops caught them. They hired the players, the equivalent of $8 Canadian per game. They had fake walkie-talkies. It's a whole thing that went on. They ended up getting this, I guess, a deposit or the first amount of money sent to them, which was about $5,000 before it got crashed. But the guy that created this worked 8 months in a Russian pub. So he kind of got there, he got the scoop about like what it's like betting in Russia, and he came over and he's like, let's do this. And he created this fake league, and they almost made it to the championship, and they got caught. But I've never heard something like this, and I would be definitely one to be, hey, this is a Indian Premier League, let's put it in the wake and break.
I'll tell you this right now. This is already a movie. This reminds me a lot of... 100%. Do you remember a couple of years ago when we found out about like the McDonald's scams that were going on with the people who were ripping off, and then they made a show out of that, but I didn't watch it because the news articles were more compelling and I already got the deal. But yeah, it was like, dudes, the guy that was in charge of protecting the monopoly pieces that win the big ticket prizes, he was grifting them. He was grifting those suckers, and he was like giving them out to family members. And anyway... That reminds me of this, except for this is way cooler. This is way cooler scam. I just can't believe, like, the level of production and...
They went all in on this.
The level of production and commitment, and there had to be big money coming in on the betting scene, because this is just way too much work. That if you showed up and went, wow, what did our IPL scam make last night? And you're like, $500. Everyone's going to murder you. It's too much. It's too much work. You got to be raking it in. And yeah, I think that, God, there's so many things I love about this. The players where they had to be at least halfway decent.
Okay, so I found a video of it. I'll DM it to you. And you can watch it during the break. like it's
because you can't look like a total plug out there. IPL is a legit league. Like it's a legit league. I love it. Like I actually really tried to get into IPL when they first brought it to Sportsnet.
Maybe you accidentally bet on this.
No, I never bet on it. I've never bet on it. But yeah, I was a big Slingamalinga guy. Like I love IPL. Like it's sick. It's so sick. So I would be able to spot the fake. I think I could spot the fake.
You think? I'm going to get
that's why I'm curious to see the video. No, that's why I'm curious to see the video to be like, yo, what's up with this? Like, that's crazy, though. Like, that's really crazy that they did this. That's a wild execution of a scam, a plan.
Kudos to
and
them,
to also get to the championship, it's like you denied some guys their championship celebration.
Yeah, they're fake.
You know, these guys would have had a fake championship celebration. They would have been popping champagne on the dollars that they grifted off you. Would have been sick.
Oh,
poor guys.
Awesome.
They were so close.
Awesome.
So
I'm sure
close.
This could be a text line thing about like what are some of the worst things you've ever like bet on. Like there's been times where you're just scrolling the betting apps and you're like, wow, I'm going to bet on what is it the league that you like? Australian
women's soccer.
Women's soccer. No, I meant
AFL.
Yeah, that's different. But there's some weird ones that pop up in the app. It's like live now, Croatian tennis tournament that you've never heard of.
I always have to Google it because I go, is this actually real or is this the gambling app just being like, hey, if you bet on this, you lose because you're an idiot. So go to bed. go to bed or give us money and you Google it. But it's like, yeah, I've bet on everything. I've bet on every single possible thing. Like you name it, I've bet it. Let's take a break. Let's talk to John Morosi. Again, text line Tuesday, fire away, whatever you want to do. And check us out on Notes. All right. During the break, Notes appin' it on Instagram. So follow at JD Bunk, is at Ailish Forfar. John Morosi next. How aggressive are teams going to be the next couple of weeks heading into the deadline? What's he hearing? Who's the movers and shakers? How has this last week and a half affected the Blue Jays? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show, JD and Ailish. It's text line Tuesday, so fire away. Text line 590-590. You can also reach us at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar about anything today. I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of Matt Murray stuff. Jay's front office, you know, owes the Leafs a favor. I didn't put that in the list of the pros and cons or the timing of this move, but maybe Shapiro and Atkins gave Dubas a call and they were like, listen, if we're all going to do this, like we could use you guys stealing the limelight a little bit today. Could use you guys changing the narrative in the city and changing the lead topic in sports radio from the hell is wrong with the Blue Jays and who's to blame and who's underperforming and what are the stakes, what are we doing, to what are you guys doing? All right? You guys take the heat for a day. We're getting back into the Blue Jays now, though. John Morosi, MLB Network Insider. Good morning, John.
JD, good morning, my friend. How's everything going?
Things are well. I love content. I love moves. Here's what I'll tell you. I hate the position the Blue Jays are in right now. I've hated watching these games lately, and I love watching games, but they've now become a bit of a chore as of late. I want the Blue Jays to be young, exciting, winning ball games, but I love content, and at least they're interesting. You know, like at least it's interesting.
Yeah,
I'll take that.
I mean, to me, this is sports radio dream, though. You got the Murray trade, you've got free agency coming up tomorrow, and you've got the Jays, an interesting and important team, but one that is not playing up to expectations, and so that will keep you plenty busy this morning, my friend.
Yeah, it's going to keep us busy this week again as the Leafs head into free agency and we ramp up to the deadline. But then, you know, John. I'm out of here next week. All right? Like,
me
I'm gone.
Too.
And I'm like, it's Ailish and I are out of here, and we don't want to be heard from for a while because I think we're about to hit like a content. yeah, we're going to hit a dry spot here.
We'll be off
I
the guess, grid.
Well, maybe this is the way to start this is when should we be planning our vacations around when the action is going to start? Because I have. I kind of understand with so many teams that are potentially in the buyer mix and a lot of these sellers kind of wanting to see that play out or some teams wanting to see how this plays out. But when do you think we're going to start to see some action or the first team start to try to jump the market, John?
Well, it's a great question. And, of course, the All-Star game is next week. And the start, the real start to last year's trade deadline happened right as the All-Star break concluded from our old friend Alex Anthopoulos, who made the move for Joc Pederson, I believe. It was on the day right before the second half began. So I think next week we could start to see some action. And I think the question now for the Jays is how do they proceed? And I do think that they're fortunate in that what they need is available, and that is, as long as they're willing to pay the price, some shorter-term starting pitching. I don't think they're going to make the move for Luis Castillo. I don't think that they have, frankly, the prospect depth to make the best offer for him. I think the Reds are going to be able to be really patient on that and take some time. But with some names that are, again, from where I sit, legitimate guys that can help your rotation, whether it's Jose Quintana in Pittsburgh or Chad Kuhl in Colorado, Martin Perez in Texas. I mean, those are names that I think are good and will help. But that, to me, is where the Jays' issues have been most prominent. I mean, they have more issues than just the rotation, but they've given up the most runs in baseball since June the 15th. And when that's the case, you're going to struggle. And they really have to get some better tempo going with the rotation. I think that has to be job number one for the front office here in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, it's difficult, right? Because I listen to that and I go, yeah, the you know what? The Blue Jays should not be in on Luis Castillo because they just handed out hundreds of millions of dollars to Kevin Gausman and to Jose Berríos. They made a pretty sizable investment in Yusei Kikuchi. Alek Manoah is on the All-Star team and is a guy who is going to command a lot of dollars when he becomes available or when he is set for a raise, which is not for a long time, thank goodness for them. And yeah, like they've invested a lot into the starting pitching staff. So it's really hard for me to look at it and say, well, what they should be doing is pumping assets into that position. Like, no, that's not how I feel about it. Those names that you mentioned are actually even better than I would have imagined this team being in on. Like, so is your sense that guys like that, that pedigree of players, kind of like that secondary pitching market, like Perez was leading the American League in, ERA at one point this year, like for like a sizable stretch. Kuhl has been solid, and he's like a Colorado Park guy where if your ERA is under four, that pops out to me, right? Like some of those names right. are actually pretty impressive. So, yeah, you think that the Jays are in on that level of starting pitching?
I do. Now, it's a question of how they will proceed at the deadline and if they'll actually make the winning offer. But I believe they're doing their due diligence now and checking with the teams that are sellers or could be sellers. And Texas, I think, is probably trending toward being a seller when you look at how well Seattle's playing and just the dynamics of the American League West in general. But, yes, I believe, and I can't speak to where the specific conversations are exactly on all three of them. But I do think that class of pitching is where the Jays are active. And the other side of it is, I think offensively, maybe they bring in a bat that sort of helps solidify this lineup from the left side. And maybe we're talking about somebody. I would love to see them just take a look at Dominic Smith from the Mets, because clearly he's not part of their core group and is, I think, available to some extent, at least at the deadline. They need to get more left-handed. They need to be a little more, I just think, a little harder to game plan for, because they're very right-handed and they're very similar at-bat to at-bat. I made the comparison yesterday in talking about them to and just drawing the distinction between where the Jays are and where the Yankees are. The Yankees have players that have at-bats that look different, that make a pitcher stop and think and change his approach. Guys like Rizzo and Carpenter from the left side, in addition to obviously Judge and Stanton and LeMahieu, and it's just they're a really, really good team. Donaldson too. But there's just not enough moments in the Jays lineup that make a pitcher right now stop and think and adjust and work a 7-8 pitch at bat and really think his way through and grind an at bat. That's just, the Jays are not doing that right now. And I think some element of that can come from the outside, potentially at the deadline, to just help give the lineup a little more diversity. But in general, the guys they've got in house have to be better at the same time as the pitching improves. I mean, this is a team with a lot of talent, but with a lot of holes as well. And I think what we've all seen just the last month or so, just look at how the Yankees and the Astros have played, and that's the standard. And the Jays are multiple players away from meeting that standard, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, the last couple of days, there's been a lot of dissecting and looking over the season so far and wondering how this got here and what this has been. And I'm glad that you did mention the offense and the left-handed hitting and just, like, the lineup versatility, because I've been saying it for quite some time. In fact, I was saying it even before the season, that I think that the offense is a little overrated, that it's hard because they can put up these really hot streaks that all of a sudden they push up and go. You can always portray the Jays' offense in a way where you'll be like, hey, the last 3 weeks, the last month, they're the number one offense in OPS and WRC plus, and it's like, yes, absolutely, they can get hot because they have a ton of talent, they have a ton of power. But overall, like, I keep saying this to Blue Jays fans, why is it that there are some nights where you just feel like the team is down a couple of runs and they're out of it against, like, mediocre pitching? And it is because of the things that you outlined. And it is because, like, they are prone to not have to work counts with pitchers. Like, there's a reason why a James Caprillion, who's like a plus 5.5 ERA guy in Oakland, can get through 7 innings against this team. It's because they don't draw walks and they don't draw out at bats. And so, yeah, I do think that they need a lot more of that. So it sounds like, from what you're saying, though, John, because I think this has been the question, when you say that they're a good team, but they're a team that has a lot of holes and that this is the standard, that leads people to wonder one of two ways, where they go, well, how aggressive is this team going to be right now? And this is something that I've kind of heard differently from different people, but your sense seems to be, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just kind of trying to read between the lines a little bit here, is that the Jays are still going to remain hyper-aggressive come deadline time, or at least fairly aggressive come deadline time, regardless of what even happens over the next 6 games.
I agree. I think that's a fair assessment. And this team, when you look at the playoff structure, the playoff format, as flawed as they are, they still have, if you look at Fangraphs this morning, they still have a 79% chance to make the playoffs. 79. So this is where I think the new playoff format, or even just think about the way it was before this year, it still compels teams to stay in this. And this is where, in the American League, I've been lucky that I've traveled a fair amount and covered a lot of teams this season up close. The Yankees and Astros are just better than everybody else. They're just better. They are just a cut above, clearly, than everybody else in the American League. Now, does that mean that we should all just, you know, put the bats and balls away and come back in the middle of October and get ready for the ALCS between those two teams? No, because things can happen in the playoffs, and really good teams can go cold at the absolute wrong time, which is why the Jays, I think, have an obligation to keep their team close enough within striking distance and address the obvious weaknesses on this team and put themselves in a position to potentially make a run if things fall into place. I mean, that's what you have to do. This is competitive. This is Major League Baseball. So I don't think they should, as much as we can see the clear differences between the Yankees and Astros and everybody else in this league, the Jays still owe it to, I think, their fans and to themselves, the organization, ownership, to put a run together if they can do it. And they've got the talent, they really do. But to your point, they have very good players to sometimes great players who are not playing that way right now. And I mentioned, you know, actually, I'll go back and make this statement. When I was covering the Tigers years ago, Dave Dombrowski said once that if you want to win the league, if you want to win your league and be a legitimate championship team, you better look at a majority of the spots on your field and say, I have one of the three best players in the league at that position. A majority of your position player. You better look at your team and say that that's the case at a majority of spots. And the Jays right now, if you want to look at it just based on their, let's just say, wins above replacement at Fangraphs as one metric. It's not perfect, but it works for this discussion. How many do you have that are like top seven or eight, let's just say, when you broaden it out to National League, seven or eight players in the league at your given position? And the Jays have that at two, Kirk and Springer. Notice I didn't say Vlad, I didn't say Bichette, I didn't say Teoscar. They've got two.
Well, we've noticed.
The catcher and the center fielder. right now, Vlad Jr., and again, not his fault, but I'm just making his point, Vlad Jr. right now is the 11th best first baseman in baseball. Bo Bichette is the 11th best shortstop in baseball. That's what the metrics say. That's what the numbers say. And I think that probably affirms what Jays fans have seen with their eyes all season. They're still above average, but they're not in that elite category right now. And I think the question is a fair one. Can the Jays win without Vlad and Bo being elite? And I think the answer right now is they look pretty mediocre. That's been the story for this team for the last month or so.
They also, well, they're not getting it there, but a big thing they need to address at this upcoming trade deadline is relief. What do you think the relief market's looking like, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think to me it's going to be a key part of the deadline, as it is in many years with respect to the bullpen, because it's a spot of your club that you can really work on, I think, in season without tinkering too much with the essential chemistry of your team. And so I think a couple teams to me stand out. One is Detroit. I know the Tigers are coming in later this month. Michael Fulmer, I think, will move. Andrew Chafin very easily could move as well. I think that the Nationals could easily move some guys, and certainly the Nats have been a team that I think they've been linked a lot of different ways to number of teams, the Jays being one of them. Steve Cishek is one name to watch there. There are certainly enough relievers out there. Arizona's got an all-star in Joe Mantiply that I think is really a good fit for a lot of different teams. So I think, broadly speaking, I expect the Jays to be active in the relief market, and that is almost always, you know, David Robertson of Chicago, I'll mention him as well. It's almost always a part of the market that tends to move late. But usually at the final buzzer, if you need a reliever, you can get one if you're willing to pay the price. And I would say the Jays might have to wait until the last couple days before August 2nd. But I do believe that will be something that they do address. And they also have to hope that obviously their prospects hold their value. And that hasn't necessarily been the case this year. Groshans, his numbers have not been especially good. Martinez has been, his value might not be quite as high as it was when he had just that tremendous spring training. So I think, Ailish, for me, that they have to hope that their prospects hold their value pretty well the next couple of weeks to make those deals happen.
John, as always, we appreciate the time. Good luck to your Red Wings. That might be frisky in free agency, might not be, but at least they got a little bit of buzz right now. You know, like you got.
Yeah, they
buzz
do. I think the Husso move was good, and we'll see. Do they make a run? My friend Max Boltman wrote that maybe they would make a run at Evgeny Malkin. It'd be interesting to see that happen. I still think, for me, it's all about Andrew Kopp, the great Michigan Wolverine, who's a local guy. He can play center very
it's
well.
It's all about Andy
and
Kopp.
He knows. Andrew Kopp, he fits. And he knows, by the way, he wore number 9 in Winnipeg. He knows that if he signs with the Wings, being a local guy, you can't ask for number 9 in Detroit, which he'll know that. So you respect the local guy in that respect.
I love it. John Morosi, thanks for the time as always, pal.
All the best, people. Thank you so much.
Take care. It's MLB Insider, John Morosi. A bunch of interesting stuff there. I'll just say this. That is a good component about the Blue Jays, is that there's lots of different things that they can add, so they can be flexible.
Actually, that felt good to hear some names and a little bit of confidence that there's options out there, because it's a little bit different than the Leafs and the goalie market was.
I'm a little surprised that they would be in on that level of pitching, but I would also say that really tells you with where they're at with Yusei Kikuchi. Again, I've been saying it for days now, but the neck strain might be a phantom injury, but I don't know if he's going to be able to get over the yips. Like, he looks completely lost out there, and he does not look like a guy who can face any level of adversity. And I wonder if they're already looking at this like, hey, come back next year, basically, and we'll try then. but this year is almost it's a write-off.
Yeah,
like if you go and get
feels that way.
If you go and get that level of starting pitcher that John just outlined, because those guys are good. Like those are not elite caliber pitchers, but those are good pitchers. If you are in that group and you're willing to pay those prices, that really tells you something. I think the second part of that was really interesting is the prospect pool has been really under discussed. I'm not really sure what the Jays like. We're gonna have to get like a Ben Badler on at some point, like heading into the free age or into the deadline, because it's like I don't see anybody in their organization that was exciting heading into this year looking like there's more buzz around them now. Like, let's put it this way. Here's how you know about baseball prospects. When you hear a lot about them, when you're going, did you see this? Mm-hmm. Did you hear this? Did you hear this? What's happening with that with the Jays right now? Moreno is awesome. You hope that he's in the long-term plans, but he looks even like a guy that's a little bit further away than, you know, we had originally hoped when he first showed up here. There's a lot to like. The tools are obviously there. I like the way that he works ABs. I like that he's a different hitter. I like that he's got a cannon for an arm. I like his poise. I like a lot about him. But right now, if you're saying, hey, JD, the Jays are going in with two catchers, like, what do you want to do? I'm going, yeah, it's Danny Jansen if he's healthy, and it's Alejandro Kirk, and there's no question about it. He's not there yet. Let him play a ton in AAA. And call him up when rosters expand. Cool. He needs reps. The other guys, you haven't heard a lot of. So it's like, what are the Jays working from? And heading into the deadline, it's like, yeah, what are they going to be willing to sacrifice in order to chase this season? Like, when we're talking about rental pieces, when we're talking about pitchers who are not on contracts beyond this year, or relief pitchers that are one-and-dones, which a lot of those guys tend to be, volatile guys that even if they do have a little bit more tenure, how much are you going to be willing to spend to get into that class? I don't know. Anyway, it's text line Tuesday, 590-590. DM at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar. Tons of Matt Murray thoughts, tons of Leafs free agency thoughts, tons of Blue Jays thoughts. Good days for sports radio. If you don't have stuff for us today, you know, I'm going to be pretty choked. Instagram notes, whatever. Whatever you want to do. But first, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum. Yum, yum, yum.
Attagirl.
I am going to give you an option of a baseball chew or a basketball chew.
Give me a basketball chew.
All right. I don't really like this, and I think it'll be an interesting text line conversation. So Richard Jefferson, so NBA champs, 17-year veteran, was officiating the second quarter of an NBA Summer League and game last night after just attending like an officiating meeting in Las Vegas. And it just feels like a little bit gimmicky. Like, why do we need to do that? It, you know, there's probably really experienced NBA refs that are A, trying to get their foot in the door, but B, trying to make this seem like a legitimate league. Like, I've never been to NBA Summer League, and I know Blake has, and I know a lot of people from Sportsnet have, and I know it's got that fun vibe around it, but, like, why are we doing personalities and, like, gimmicky people reffing games? Like, I don't know. I look at NBA Summer League as an opportunity for players to develop and, like, maybe people that want to get into the reffing game. I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting thing to be, like, showcasing that personalities. Like, imagine they had... I don't know, one of our guys reffing. It just seemed like a little bit dumb to me. I didn't really like this piece of news. It's something to chew on if you're a fan.
This is where your hockey roots come out to play. Your no fun hockey.
Like, I would be annoyed if I was like a young prospect trying to make it up there.
You're a hockey player. You're a hockey player. This is Summer League doesn't matter. There are some guys that are trying to showcase themselves, but Richard Jefferson is more than qualified to ref a Summer League game one time for a little bit of contact.
One quarter, too. It's so strange.
Yeah, one quarter. There were other officials, I'm assuming, on the floor who were probably taking it a little bit more seriously. He was there probably as ceremoniously kind of running up and down the floor. I don't think that Summer League is sacred. I think that all it really is a place – where we get to see how athletic certain guys are and how they look up against just like other NBA-ish bodies. Like, you get to see Chet, you get to see Paolo, you get to see some of the top picks and how they fare. and then you're trying to find a diamond in the rough that shows like a ton of athleticism or a little bit of potential that slid through the draft and gets to showcase themselves as a undrafted free agent. But for the most part, I don't think that any player out there saw the Richard Jefferson thing and went like, this is going to cost me an opportunity.
Or actually, it was not a popular thing on Twitter. And yeah, he had his Twitter first call of a ref.
Can I ask you a question?
There's
what is
popular things on Twitter?
K-pop. That's it. That's the only thing that people are like stoked on and cool about on Twitter. Like that's the only inclusive.
His very first call as a ref, he blew it. He called it he was a out of bounds call, and he called it in favor of New York, where it's supposed to be Portland. Whatever. And the ref had to overturn the call, and I don't know. And he missed a couple other things. I just like
You know who else misses a couple of other things? Every single NBA and basketball ref who's ever existed. Anyway, again, it's just a quarter, and I just think that it's kind of dumb. It's a little gimmicky. Do I love it? No. Am I like, yes, they got to do more of this? Absolutely not. But
you're
hoping
that they'll do this for you. It sounds like
no. But do I think
call
that
NBA, JD Bunkus.
No, what I wish they would do is let me umpire some Major League Baseball.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I'm telling you, like, let me go in cold and. Of like do some umpiring and see how I do and then compare it to some of those games that the Blue Jays have had this year. Like some of those umpire scorecards and tell me that I can't even get close. That's all I'm saying. Tell me I can't even get close. Thank you. You know, this is I've been long on this take. It's nice to be supported.
This is the till you die.
Yeah, I think I'd be a sick ump. And then I'd be no guff. You know, I'd take no guff. All right. I'd take no guff from you. Actually, no, I'd be the opposite. I'd be like, guff it up. You want to complain? Sure. Whatever. Let's have a chat about it. Let's yap. I just think who cares what Twitter says about NBA Summer League? Like, am I surprised that Twitter took Summer League too seriously? No, I am not. Did Blake cry? Did Blake have a big cry?
Am I
going to talk to him about it later? Yeah, that would be good. Okay, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's do your texts. Let's do your DMs. Again, keep your DMs short, all right? Like, if you're going to fire them away on Twitter or on Instagram, at JD Bunkus, at Eilish4far, give us a chance to actually read them. Or just fire away 590-590.
I will say there's a limit to your response on notes. 60 characters or less.
Yeah, I saw that.
So just
fire away to the note dogs. Fire away to the note dogs. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Eilish, Text Line Tuesday.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Line Tuesday on the Fan Morning Show. I just made eye contact with the window cleaner directly outside my window right now. He's hanging suspended from the building, cleaning my window, and we just made eye contact. It's a very awkward situation that I was not expecting this morning as I sit here. Yes. JD is not currently listening to me, unfortunately. He's got me. I think you're muted. I might be. Yeah. Anyway, he's currently not on the air with me. So we're going to get into some texts. It's Text Line Tuesday. JD, you just missed the fact that I made eye contact with my window washer guy, correct? Like right through the window. Very uncomfortable. Okay. So let's get into text. Les from Stratford has a shot at you back as an umpire. I've personally offered fans my counter to finish the game behind the plate, as it seems their strike zone is better than mine, as they have been telling me that all game long or the whole weekend. Then wonder why we have no young umpires staying in the game or having trouble finding umpires to do the games.
I think that this is a really tough spot for all officiating, which is like... You always want younger refs.
Right now.
I think well, you always want younger refs, but then it's really hard because you got to get a lot of experience. It's tough to become a ref, like in a lot of sports. Like, you got to ref a lot of games. Like, they want you to have a lot of experience, as you should. But yeah, that experience comes at a price. That's when you become a ref. That's where I look at it and go, that's what needs to change. They got to be able to get rid of refs more easily in professional sports. Like, the fact that Angel Hernandez still has a job is...
Yeah, that's pretty outrageous. Like,
exactly. Like, why is it that we can fire anybody? It's like, it's easier to get rid of a president than it is an umpire. Like, it's just, it's stupid. So why do you have the job security that you have? You should be able to have it where it's like, yeah, over a couple of years, if you stink at the job, you get fired. And that's it. That's the end of the discussion. And that isn't just simply, well, you lose playoff games. Okay, like, that's a punishment, but how about firing? Fire some people who suck at their jobs. That seems to be okay by me anyway. Yeah, and it's not like you can't get a different reffing job in a different league. It's not like, oh my God, college basketball will never need a ref if you get fired from the NBA. Like, it should be a privilege to be in those leagues. You should have the best. There should be accountability, just like the players. The players essentially get fired if they're not good enough. Why can't the refs be? Anyway, that's my biggest issue with them, is that it's impossible to get rid of them. I heard your thing about the window washer, by the way. I just had my mic muted like an idiot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like,
sorry to Josh. Because I think I sounded a little salty to him when he was just asking me politely if he could hear me. And I was like, yeah. I was kind of a jerk. Sorry to Josh. Those guys must see so many naked people. Like, that's the perk of the job.
I think, like, it's like 7 a.m. Somebody's ripping out of the shower right now. No towel.
So here's my belief. Pervs, the biggest pervs, masseuse, like, come on. What are you guys doing? Come on, dudes. Come on, just a minute. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to expose you guys, but like, masseuse, dudes, male masseuse, you guys are up to no good. Like, and then number two is window washer, because I think that what that is dudes who are so horny that they are willing to overcome their fear of heights to see,
or they
people.
Must get paid $1 million to dangle, yeah, from the side.
I think it's a little bit of both.
It might
be
all of those options.
I think those are the two horniest jobs. All right, you tell me if I'm wrong. That's the power rankings, 1 and 2.
I think you're correct on that. I've never thought about that, power ranking the most horniest jobs. at 7 a.m. But I think you nailed it. Thank you.
Yeah, I do. I think I nailed it. I do.
Speaking of the kind of the opposite.
Reach out anytime at JD Buckets, world's horniest jobs.
I had a lot of people ask me briefly about last night. I posted, I was having dinner. It was my birthday, and the couple beside
me. You haven't mentioned it. Was your birthday yesterday?
No. The couple beside me were just sitting at their table, openly breaking up in a very nice establishment at, like, having dinner. They must have come to this location to break up. And I thought, that is a very uncomfortable decision. Why would you not break up in the privacy of your own home? Why do you need to come to this restaurant to break up? What is the thought process behind that? And you'll never be able to come back to that restaurant, I think. Like, it's going to be scarred for you. I just thought it was really strange. And they were just sitting beside me, like, completely going through their relationship breaking up. And I was eavesdropping. Like, my ear was extended to as close as I could get to them without making it very obvious that
was
I was
the
like,
table
it was
right
like dinner
you?
And a show right beside me.
Yeah.
And they're like, narrow. There's like, you have to shimmy through the tables. Like, there's not a lot of space. Mm-hmm. We were real tight in the conversation.
When they go, like, if you could have dinner with anyone dead or alive, who would you have? It's like, I'd rather go see a couple break up like that than anything else. So, Edgar Allan Poe? No. I want to hear a couple break up. I want to see Kurt Cobain all slunched out, all, like, strung out. No. I want to sit next to the couple who is breaking up like that. Like, that's an enviable position.
It was a nice treat for my birthday. I loved it.
Yeah. Here's my question back to you. Would you rather be beside a couple breaking up or a couple that's on an awkward first date trying to, like, find their footing?
I think the awkward first date's really, like, fun to kind of, like, you're like, I always, like, when I'm sitting in a restaurant, I look around, I'm like, they're definitely on a first date. Like, you can tell.
Yeah.
But I've never sat beside a first date couple to hear, like, where'd you go to school?
Yeah.
What's your job?
I'm good at first dates, so I don't really know what that's like. I just kind of crush it out of the park. You've seen me. Okay. Like, last time we went out for beers, that
yeah,
waitress.
Yeah, that's right. You were all over that. That waitress was really...
Whoa! I was all over that waitress? What,
sorry. You were good at, you know, keeping the conversation going, and you were respectfully coy and flirty back, you know?
Who was all over who?
Sorry, she... Yes. But you know, you gave it back to her a little bit. You were flirting.
Yeah, of course. You give it back. I wasn't going to be rude. It was like, okay, so that was that. And I think that whenever I've been on first dates, I usually that is a one little component of it is the feeling of self-consciousness of, do they know? Like, do these servers know and do these people know? And when you're in a bar and it's tight quarters and you always have to like, listen, I speak for a living, right? So it does come a little bit easier to me than it does for other people in terms of just starting a conversation, asking certain questions. Like, I do it every single day. It is different. So if I have a bad conversation out of the gates, I don't blame me as much. All right. Let's just say that. I don't blame me.
Definitely the other person.
I blame the other person a little bit more. Yeah. But I always think like, cause some of the line of questioning, especially when it gets flat and you're in a crowded place, you go, oh man, I've been where the people beside me are, and it's way fun to listen to somebody kind of struggle through a conversation and then
or
go
like when
home.
They have like, they definitely Googled like first date questions. Like, would you rather be invisible or able to fly?
When people ask me that stuff on dates, I like, it's over. It's done. It's like,
wow,
as soon
you
as,
sound fun to go on a date with.
Yeah, as soon as I get into that stuff, it's like, all right, we've got nothing to talk about here. I don't know. I just like, I've had that before where there's like dating cue cards or things where it's like, yeah, there's little questions and you go.
Have you ever been speed dating before? Does that exist?
I've never been speed dating before, but I also just think that that's just like actually the way to do it because it's like, it's like that's what speed dating is.
Do you
just
have a connection right
like,
now or not? Bye.
No, are you hot? Do I find you attractive? Yes or no? Next table. Like, I don't think that you need more time than that. Like, depends on your age, I think. A little bit. Depends on your age.
Yeah.
That's all. So for the olds like me, now I'm into, you know, long dating. That's what I need to have. It's about
long
personality now.
Dating.
Yeah.
Jeff from Oakville just texted in. I was on a date and halfway through the dinner, my ex-girlfriend says hi from the table directly behind me. I didn't know she was there. She had been listening to our entire conversation.
Yeah, that's literally the first question I'm thinking is, how long have you been there? You know?
Yeah.
And
it's
was
like,
the date
what were
going
you
well?
Hearing? Oh.
No, because, okay, here's the thing though. This could go one of two ways. If the date was going well and you're crushing it and she's hot, then that's an all-time moment for you. Like, that's a – you just like, literally just put up a huge score on the breakup scoreboard. Like, that is a swish. Like, but if you were struggling and she's better looking, yeah, it's tough. It's a tough one, Jeff. And that's when you're like, we got to go. And then if you do go – and that's also bad because now it's hovering over everything. So, yeah, you do kind of go. But if you do go, you kind of look weak. It's just not – that's a tough one, dude. That's a tough one if it didn't go – unless you were crushing it and then you just decided to stay and keep crushing it, in which case then you're a legend. You're a god. You know, you will build a statue of Jeff outside that restaurant very soon. What's next?
Let us know how the date was, Jeff. Okay, last one on this before we get into real text. Meredith and EG, my girl. As a former server waiting on a table that's on a first date, is the most fun, especially if they're teenagers, adorable, and if it's going well. I've had experiences where the first date went well, and as a server,
especially
you become a
teenagers.
Small piece of their love story. It's nice. Also, a couple going through World War III can be just as fun, especially when they leave and the whole place starts talking about it.
Yeah, Meredith is obviously the sweetest listener we have. Like, there's just no doubt about
She's
it.
She's the best.
But yeah, that's like, I have nothing to say to this. Like, this is like,
love
what
it.
Do you
Thanks,
want me to
Meredith.
Do like, it's very,
very
sweet. Yeah.
Okay, Joe from PEI. Oh, good morning.
What's up, Joe?
It is the end. Is it the end of the Matthews era in Toronto with the acquisition of Matt Murray as your win now goalie?
Dude,
so we just took a big turn.
Everybody, chill out. Is it the end of the Matthews era? He's got 2 years left on his deal, and I already outlined this at the beginning of the show. Listen, if you haven't been listening, we did every pro and con on the signing of Matt Murray, how it got here, and where it could go. And yeah, it's a risky acquisition. Like, there's just no doubt about it. The Leafs only got a third round pick to take on $4.7 million of a goalie that doesn't play more than 20 some games the last two seasons. A guy who's been hurt and a guy who's had erratic play. he's had, but let's not pretend like goalies are this thing where once a guy is good and has one good season, then he's set forever. Like, it's not easy to pin these guys down and predict what they're going to do at times. Usually, the situation has a big impact on the situation. And, like, this was the entire Freddie Anderson debate. Like, I'm surprised that this market is having this much difficulty with some of this, considering what we've gone through the last, I don't know, two decades when it comes to goaltending. Like,
well,
yes,
Freddie last year, sorry, he signed a $4.5 million 2-year contract last year as well. It's very similar in terms of term and money.
The Leafs? And
we're not talking about it.
But if we're talking about the Freddie thing, this is what I strongly believe, is that the Leafs blew the goaltending market last year. They could have absolutely better positioned themselves, and they needed to. And if you remember back, Peter Mrazek's contract and the way that it was designed was absolutely a hedge against Jack Campbell to say, like, if Jack walks, they have a guy here. And it backfired to the extent where they needed to dump an asset to get rid of him. And yes, it was a trade back, and yes, it was way less of an asset than we all thought it was going to be, but it was draft position and it was an asset nonetheless. And I don't care if they say they got their guy, Fraser Minton, at that spot. Every single team says that whenever they get any single pick. That's the ultimate liars who lie, okay? So they blew it last year. This year, given the fact that they had already blown it, I think that they actually did a kind of a fine job. If you think that, I think you could argue that they blew it with free agency last year in the trade market and not addressing the goaltender better than Peter Mrazek as the backup and the guy that was going to be the holdover into the 2022 season. And I think Kyle Dubas blew it with his negotiations with Jack Campbell. It seems to me that they lowballed him, that it became contentious, and that the entire NHL knew exactly the way that it was going to play out, and that was that Toronto was not going to give him term, and that allowed somebody like Pierre Dorion to tell the Toronto Maple Leafs, no, we will not be doing this trade at 50% salary retention. We will be doing it on terms that we believe are friendlier to us, and they were. Dorion won those negotiations. But to take this into the extremes of, like, we already know how this has played out is ludicrous to me. Like, there is absolutely a reality that Matt Murray plays, you know, 38 to 45 games next year, is competent, goes into the playoffs healthy, and performs better than any Leafs goaltender in the postseason under Kyle Dubas. Like, that is absolutely a possibility. Is it probable? I would say no. It's a roll of the dice. And I think that it's a bit of an extreme roll of the dice given the contract, given the salary per year. But the market was the market. I don't think they could have bought Mrazek back. I think it was done here. They clearly didn't want to go into a 5-year term with other goaltenders. They didn't have the assets to be able to pluck Ville Husso and then also give him the same contract. And, like, again, I don't think that there's that big of a difference in terms of, like, play-for-play vacuum between Husso and 2 years. 2 years of Husso and 2 years of Matt Murray if he's healthy. And they never were able to get in on the Marc-Andre Fleury negotiation in a serious way. So this was what was available to them. Again, they put themselves in this position, and they are going to be at fault if it does not work out. But the idea that Austin Matthews isn't going to be here because they got Matt Murray yesterday is like, dude, PEI, chill out. I thought you guys were chill on the East Coast.
Yeah. Okay, so this is an interesting conversation that I there's no name on it, but I know you guys aren't saying this, but why are other people acting like Jack Campbell has been this healthy Vezina candidate?
Exactly.
How much more confident are you that Jack Campbell would stay healthy? And it's a great point. Like, I'm not, like, fully confident in that fact. He has played a much more of a starting player role last year, which Matt Murray hasn't done in a long time. And I think that's the biggest difference for me, is he did that with Toronto. He did come back from some injuries for sure, but he did get a bigger sample size that we saw.
Jack Campbell is 30 years old. Matt Murray is 28.
Hmm.
So you're going to pay Jack Campbell into his age 35 season when last year was the most amount of games that he has ever played at 49. These are Jack Campbell's totals from before that. 22, 26, 31, 5, 1, 1. The idea that Jack, like, listen, right now, would I rather have Jack Campbell? Of course. So would the rest of the league. That's why he's going to get a contract, and that's why if Matt Murray was a free agent, he would not be rivaling what Jack Campbell is getting. But you can understand the trepidation of the Toronto Maple Leafs to extend a guy who has started, I believe, 142 games in the NHL. I'm just saying that it, to me, is more of a discussion. And you're right to bring these things up. I don't think that Dubas deserves praise at all for this deal. Like, I think, again, this is a desperate move. And to have this goaltender that is this big of a risk in those last 2 years of Austin Matthews' contract, in a moment where this team seems to have their prime of their core at their very best, is a massive undertaking of risk. But Dubas is going to pay for it with his job if it does not work out. I still believe that there's a second shoe to drop here. We'll ask Frank Cervelli what he thinks it is at 8 o'clock today. I have a hard time believing it's Shalgren, but I also think that given right now, if they don't make other moves to free up some cap space, that it might be difficult to really change that and see what that could be. I also, to the people who have said, like, I had one guy reach out on the Instagram DMs about how he was, like, basically making the point that Matt Murray could go on LTIR and that frees up space. It's like, nobody's planning to have a goalie on LTIR right now, man. Like, they don't want Matt Murray to be on LTIR. But I will say this, like, there are some people that look at it and go, yeah, but they'll be able to make some adjustments in season. And it's like, usually, if you're having to make the adjustment in season for a goaltender, it's going to cost you...
Something's going poorly, too.
Well, it's going to cost you a pretty penny, or you're going to have to, like, take a real lottery ticket. Like, again, Jack Campbell was a lottery ticket that worked out for them. Look at the price that was paid for Marc-Andre Fleury last year. It's not going to be cheap to acquire real goaltending help at the deadline, and it is also, like, you are putting yourself at the mercy of the market, which I don't think is good planning. So, yeah, it's a risky-ass move, but I think that giving Jack Campbell 5 years is a greater risk in a lot of ways.
Interesting one that we can bring up with Frank Cervelli, who we have next. This is David from Wasaga. Being that Samsonov was not qualified and a UFA, does Dubas try to get him as a tandem with Murray?
Say that again. You cut out for a second.
Oh, sorry. This is from David from Wasaga. Yeah. Being that Samsonov was not qualified and a UFA, does Dubas try to get him in the tandem with Murray?
Well, I am a little curious about that. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is, again, something that I talked about earlier in the show. Had they not made the Murray move, or had they not acquired Murray, then it feels like they would have been going in a free agency trying to overpay this guy. I would guess that based on what people are saying about goaltending right now, that he's going to cost more than you would expect. And I don't think, this is the interesting thing about the Leafs, is like, so they clearly didn't want to spend, like, if you look at last year for as a template, right, Jack and Mrazek combined, I don't think that the Leafs want to spend over $6 million at the goaltending position right now. Like, I think that they want to try to make that.
Would they, like, be left with, like, nothing?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think that they're going to be looking, I wonder if they're still looking at the trade market and seeing how this thing all shakes out and wondering, you know, once all the dominoes have kind of settled, once they've all fallen down, what's going to actually be there more than them being proactive and trying to go out and get a top-tier guy like Samsonov. That's and I mean top-tier in terms of, like, what's available in free agency, because he's like the secondary shelf, right, when it comes to starters. So I like it intrigues me, obviously, more than a lot of other options. Like, it intrigues me more than Shalgren, even though Shalgren did show some things last year. But no, I don't... My read on this situation, it does not appear to be that the Leafs will be the, like, I think the Leafs are the vultures in free agency. They're not the lions.
That's good. I like that. That's a good way to put that. Lots of questions about Matt Murray. Let's get one more
in
here.
Keep going.
Scott from Waterloo. Do you feel that Ottawa retained enough of Murray's contract to make this a worthwhile gamble? If he has injuries again and can't play much hockey, it's Mrazek all over again, but with a larger contract.
Well, not really, but kind of. Okay, so first of all, let me plug the podcast, a fan morning show. Please go to Spotify or iTunes and subscribe and listen to that first hour, because I really did put in a lot of work to make sure that I covered every angle of this. And though a lot of your questions from text line are going to be answered in that block. And what I said is, I think Dorion won the negotiation. I think that, to me, that is clear. That Dubas blinked first, that the Ottawa Senators needed to get off of that money, that contract, because they are in a position where they're trying to build off of the excitement around their club right now, and I think they want to be in on Claude Giroux, and I think that they'd like to add another splashy free agent. They already had two goaltenders, and that was $6.25 million on their books for two more years for a guy that also had a no-move clause. And what I wondered was, what exactly is the market for Matt Murray outside of Toronto? What was the team that was going to be in on this? Who are you negotiating against, Kyle Dubas? And I think Dubas blinked. I think that he was uncomfortable going into the beginning of free agency, which is tomorrow, with not a single goaltender under contract. And I think he blinked first, and I think Dorion won the negotiation, and that's what they were quibbling over, and they had to be quibbling over it. Because if Matt Murray's making $3 million, I think that it's really hard to complain about this deal. Like, if he's making $3 million, and you would have even got, like, a fourth-round pick back, and he's a lottery ticket, you make it gives you a little bit more flexibility to add another goalie. You can add another guy that is $3 million. Like, maybe that is a Samsonov or closer to it, right? Like, and have a more true and obvious tandem. Him making that extra $1.7 million is, like, that drops you down a tier in terms of what you can do with your backup. That increases your level of risk. And, yeah, I think that the Leafs took on too much risk. They took on too much salary. And mm-hmm. I don't think it's quite as bad as Mrazek in terms of, like, the like length from last year where you're saying it's Mrazek all over again. But I do think it's like, here's what I would say. Is it possible that Mrazek has a better season or is a better goaltender and a healthier goaltender than Matt Murray? Yeah, which is kind of tough to wrap your head around.
Oof, that would be rough. Before we take last one here, before we take a break, an update mm-hmm. from Jeff from Oakville.
Yeah.
Date update. It was very good, and we ended up getting married. Also still friends with the ex-girlfriend. Wow.
All right, Jeff. That's too much bragging from you.
Yeah, you know what, Jeff? Like,
also, I like to picture Jeff in his, like, mom's basement being like, and we're happily ever after. You know, he's just like,
oh, it's like, good, Jeff. For you.
Yeah. Yeah, good for you, Jeff.
Good for you, Jeff.
And then on the positive note before we – well, it's time for a break. And then
Matt Murray stuff next.
Yes. So we're going to talk to Frank Saravelli next after the break. And it's Text on Tuesday. We'll squeeze a couple more in there before we go. Same morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.